Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading for the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, November 5th. Commentary. Wilson, Myers, respect each other, respect COVID-19. This is commentary from Larry Wilson and Russell Myers of Midland Health. Election Day dawned with the news that Midland Memorial Hospital had reached a new record high number of COVID-19 patients. We are deeply into the third wave of widespread infection in our community and across West Texas. Tuesday morning, we had 62 inpatients and 8 more holding in the emergency department awaiting a bed. 15 of those came from communities outside of Midland, a number that has been declining as we find ourselves unable to accept transfers from around the region due to our high census. By midday, we had moved to the next level in our surge plan and found beds for all 70 patients, representing 28% of the hospital's total beds. We still have some room, but our expansion options are limited to those beds we can safely staff with nurses, respiratory therapists, and other necessary caregivers and support staff. As the weather cools and the holidays approach, it is crucial that we all respect the potential of this devastating disease. While it's true that over 80% of those contracting COVID-19 will have minimal or no symptoms, they are still able to spread the virus. Fewer than 15% of those infected will need medical care, but the risk of getting sick is much greater as we age. For those under 20, the risk of hospitalization is about 1%. For those over 50 years of age, it is 8%. For those in their 80s, 1 out of 5, 20%, will need to be hospitalized. With the vast majority of infected people experiencing few or no symptoms, we can be lulled into falsely minimizing the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Regardless of your own personal experience with the virus, the fact is that the healthcare systems in Midland and throughout West Texas are being overwhelmed. Please take this virus seriously. Family gatherings have become the most likely source of continuing spread. Be cautious around anyone who does not live in your home full-time. Even visiting family members should be treated as potential sources of the virus. If you choose to gather, do it outdoors or in well-ventilated spaces with room for social distancing. Wear a mask unless you are alone. Please get a flu vaccination. Flu numbers are down so far this year, and we don't need to be dealing with both infections. The only way to continue to keep Midland open for business is to respect one another. We have to continue distancing, masking, and frequent hand cleaning until we have a viable solution. Our best hope for getting past this pandemic is immunity from a vaccine, and widespread availability of a vaccine is still months away. Dr. Larry Wilson is the Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Midland Health. Russell Myers is the President and Chief Executive Officer. Vargas, Joyner, talk strategy heading into runoff. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. And then there were two in District 4. The one-on-one matchup of the two stronger candidates will take place in the runoff for Midland ISD District 4. Steve Vargas and Katie Joyner combined for nearly 90% of the vote in the general election Tuesday night and will compete in the runoff that Midland County elections officials said is likely to take place on December 8th. The class of the District 4 field finished 1-2 on Tuesday, with Vargas collecting 2,082 votes and Joyner 1,860 votes, according to the election office's unofficial final results. Quote, "We knew this was a very real possibility," Joyner said Wednesday. "We have planned for this. We knew it was most likely from all results." For Vargas, a DPS trooper, he said the runoff is an opportunity to get his supporters back to polling centers and ensure they are being represented. Vargas's opposition to current Midland ISD leadership was the most outspoken of the three. "But one only has to go back 2 years to see a case where a person got the most votes in the general election but fell in the runoff," Midland ISD District 5. Quote, "We might have to be more aggressive," Vargas said. "We will be reaching out, talking to the community to make sure they know that I have been involved," end quote. Vargas said it is important for his voters to know that he realizes they are sacrificing their time when they vote or come to him with an education issue. He added he plans to sacrifice more of his time to make sure that he has their best interests. Joyner is also making her first journey into politics. Both are seeking the mostly central Midland seat currently occupied by John Kennedy, who said he would not seek a second term. She talked about being well-positioned financially and in terms of being able to get her message back out for a sprint to the finish. She also has studied recent Midland electoral history and knows that the highly motivated will get out the vote. Quote, "It is imperative that our support know we are finished," Joyner said. "This is a new starting line. It resets the tone and race," end quote. Joyner said she will stay with her message and make sure people know we are about change and making big, positive changes. Editor's note, the Reporter-Telegram will have a story on the other Midland ISD board race headed to a runoff in a future edition. The District 1 runoff currently includes James Fuller and Michael Booker, based on unofficial results from election night. Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves said there are still more than 300 provisional and other ballots that need to be counted. "The process," she said, "isn't any different than any other election. It is not known what districts that the provisional ballots may impact or if they are even from potential voters that live inside Midland ISD boundaries." Shell unveils new home in West Midland. Shell's familiar yellow and red logo is now adorning the Oxy Permian Plaza building, former home to Occidental Petroleum, before the company moved across the street to the campus built by Anadarko. Shell will occupy 50,000 square feet, the first and second floors, of the South Tower at 6001 Deauville. Employees are relocating from Shell's location on Rankin Highway and should be in the building by the 1st of December. Kevin McMahon, general manager, Shell U.S. Shales Operations, commented, quote, "In a community that has seen economic conditions result in an excess of empty real estate, Shell welcomes the opportunity to reuse existing infrastructure. This relocation of office quarters demonstrates Shell's commitment to a continued presence in the Permian Basin," end quote. Oil associations welcome Wright's election to Railroad Commission. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Texas's oil industry watched closely as Republican Jim Wright handily won a seat on the Railroad Commission in Tuesday's election, defeating Democrat Krista Castaneda by 10 points. Quote, "I can understand why oil men were nervous about the race," commented Stuart McDonald, senior lecturer in the University of Texas Permian Basin's College of Business Management program, to the Reporter-Telegram by telephone. Quote, "There is a piece of the Democratic Party that really wants to shut the oil industry down. There are other parts of the party that are more reasonable," end quote. Observing the election, Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter-Telegram by telephone, quote, "One of the things we saw was voters said loud and clear, attacks on the oil and gas industry were attacks on the things they believe in, jobs and economic prosperity, which are things the industry provides. End quote. He lauded Wright's long experience in the oil and gas industry. Quote, "It'll be great to have his expertise alongside Commissioners Craddock and Christian," Shepard said. "We know Jim and can work with him." End quote. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview that he is confident, quote, "As a railroad commissioner, he will embrace science-based regulations and help foster an environment where the industry can grow." End quote. Like Shepard, Staples saw the results as an expression of support for the industry. Quote, "Texas voters understand the state's oil and natural gas industry is essential to our daily lives and will lead the way to a cleaner, brighter future," he said. "We can have strong jobs and a good environment at the same time." End quote. Texas, he said, quote, "must lead the nation in a conversation about a clean energy future and how the oil and gas industry is a strong energy production and has been. We have our work cut out for us," end quote. Jason Mogdlen, president of the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, quote, "Alliance members applaud Jim Wright for his hard-fought campaign. Clearly, Texans rejected the millions of dollars spent by out-of-state environmentalists committed to shutting down our domestic oil and gas industry." He added, "We look forward to working with Jim on common-sense energy policy." End quote. Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, commented to the Reporter-Telegram by email that Wright, quote, "has committed to continue developing the state's energy resources in a responsible manner while providing regulatory certainty to the hundreds of thousands of men and women that make up our industry, a sentiment shared by his fellow commissioners and a topic of significant importance to our state and national economy." He echoed Staples' comments in saying, quote, "Maintaining a legislative and regulatory environment conducive to economic growth and opportunity is a key strength and differentiator for Texas and something that all policy leaders should embrace. The U.S. has proven that leading the world in oil and gas production, energy diversity, and environmental stewardship are not mutually exclusive, thanks in large part to Texas," end quote.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, November 5th. "Get Started on Holiday Shopping at Local Markets" by J.C. Lewis. With the start of November, the holiday shopping season has officially begun. There will be multiple events where Midlanders can shop locally starting this weekend. The Arts Council of Midland is hosting an artist community market from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. The event will feature 25 local creatives, potters, photographers, and crafters offering their wares for sale to kick off the holiday shopping season. The event will be held mainly outdoors with a few booths inside at 1506 West Illinois Avenue. There will also be live music and food trucks. The Arts Council of Midland asks that people wear masks and social distance. Low Street Market, created by Micro Market, will be hosting its second market this Saturday. The market begins at 10 a.m. and goes until 2 at 112 Lorraine South Street. Vendors include Mac Happy Midland, The Crafty Plug, Four Dolls, with others. The Midland Market at the Bush Convention Center starts Friday. The market will have 70-plus vendors with gifts, decor, food, gourmet items, boutiques, and more. Admission is $7 with kids 12 years or younger being free. Attendees can also get a free tote shopping bag. Midland Market takes place from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday and from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday. holiday pop spot shopping show is partnering with Make-A-Wish Permian Basin for a special shopping event. The event will benefit local children during a night of shopping, festivities, and cocktails, and while helping grant a wish for a child in the community. The market will feature clothes, jewelry, gifts, children's books, and more from all over the country, Texas, and Permian Basin at the Bush Convention Center. Tickets are $20 and can be purchased at bit.ly/329WWL. Jury trials canceled in Midland County for remainder of year by Caitlin Randall. The Midland County Judiciary has opted to cancel jury trials for the remainder of 2020 as COVID-19 cases continue to rise. A decision to halt jury trials until 2021 was made because of concern for the safety and welfare of the citizens of Midland County, according to a press release sent to members of the news media Tuesday. The judiciary is hopeful jury trials will resume in early 2021. Coronavirus cases are spiking in Midland County, with a recent report from the University of Texas showing the county is in the midst of a second coronavirus wave. More than 1,000 residents have tested positive for the virus in the last 2 weeks, and Midland Health CEO Russell Myers reported Tuesday there were 70 COVID-19 patients in the hospital. Halting jury trials will create an additional backlog in cases that had already been delayed about 5 months after jury trials throughout the state were paused from the start of the pandemic until August. Judge Elizabeth Beyer Leonard of the 238th District Court told the Reporter-Telegram in June she was about 7 jury trials behind, as she normally presides over 2 trials a month, and trials had been canceled for 4 months at that time. Leonard did not immediately respond Wednesday to a request for comment on how canceling jury trials might affect district courts moving forward. District courts had previously taken steps to limit possible virus exposures by installing plexiglass, cleaning courtrooms between proceedings, and splitting those summoned for jury panels into smaller groups. Summoned residents also had the choice to opt out of jury duty if they had coronavirus concerns. Grand juries, a process separate from jury trials, will continue, and summons for the term beginning January 2021 will be mailed shortly, according to the press release from the county judiciary, which includes 10 judges. This process is separate and distinct from conducting jury trials and is essential for the criminal justice system next year, the release states. The safety plans previously developed and implemented by the judiciary will be strictly followed during the grand jury procedure. Grand juries decide if there is enough evidence to bring criminal charges or an indictment against a potential defendant. City to change way it releases COVID results. The City of Midland announced Wednesday that it has changed the way COVID-19 results are shared with the public. Starting Wednesday, the city will begin releasing new positive COVID-19 case numbers when lab results from a full calendar day have been processed. The calendar date in which a positive result is received by the Midland Health Department is the date tied to the positive case number. The city reported Wednesday that the Midland Health Department is currently working cases received October 31st and will not release a total until all lab results for that date are processed. Once the lab results for October 31st are complete, the city will begin working on the positive lab results received on November 1st, and so on, according to the city. Due to the numbers of cases received each day, the Midland Health Department is currently approximately 4 full days behind in contacting positive cases received. Ideally, staff would work the prior day's results and complete that full day. In order to deliver an accurate number of daily and even weekly cases, the Midland Health Department will move to reporting only completed daily numbers instead of partial numbers for a day. This may result in days without any numbers released to the public, depending on the backlog and volume of new positive cases. On Tuesday, the city showed 5,843 cases had been reported during the pandemic. Midland, how they voted. November 3rd, joint general election, unofficial final. Ballots cast, 58,900. President and Vice President, Donald J. Trump, Michael R. Pence, Republican, 45,463 votes. Joseph R. Biden, Kamala D. Harris, Democrat, 12,258. Joe Jorgensen, Jeremy Spike Cohen, Libertarian, 774. Howie Hawkins, Angela Walker, Green, 125. Write-in totals, 132. U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Republican, 45,584. Mary M. J. Hagar, Democrat, 11,348. Kerry Douglas McKinnon, Libertarian, 1,160. David B. Collins, Green, 215. Write-in totals, 19. U.S. Representative District 11, August Pfluger, Republican, 45,695. John Mark Hogg, Democrat, 11,075. Wacy Alf Cody, Libertarian, 1,247. Chief Justice Supreme Court, Nathan Hecht, Republican, 45,136. Amy Clark Meacham, Democrat, 11,279. Mark Ash, Libertarian, 1,280. Khadija Kat Green, Green, 308. Justice Supreme Court Place 6, Jane Bland, Republican, 46,033. Kathy Chang, Democrat, 11,586. Justice Supreme Court Place 7, Jeff Boyd, Republican, 44,787. Gisela D. Triana, Democrat, 11,485. Tom Oxford, Libertarian, 1,368. Justice Supreme Court Place 8, Brett Busby, Republican, 44,779. Gisela D. Triana, Democrat, 11,403. Tom Oxford, Libertarian, 1,429. Judge Court of Criminal Appeals, Place 3, Bert Richardson, Republican, 45,603. Elizabeth Davis Frizzell, Democrat, 11,966. Judge Court of Criminal Appeals, Place 4, Kevin Patrick Yeary, Republican, 45,765. Tina Clinton, Democrat, 11,711. Judge Court of Criminal Appeals, Place 9, David Newell, Republican, 45,930. Brandon Birmingham, Democrat, 11,515. Member State Board of Education, District 15, Jay Johnson, Republican, 45,797. John Betancourt, Democrat, 11,751. State Representative District 82, Tom Craddock, Republican, 53,299. Justice, 11 Court of Appeals District, Place 2, Bruce Williams, Republican, 53,321. Justice, 11 Court of Appeals District, Place 3, W. Stacy Trotter, Republican, 53,263. District Judge, 142nd Judicial District, David G. Rogers, Republican, 53,391. District Judge, 385th Judicial District, Leah G. Robertson, 53,241. District Attorney, 142nd Judicial District, Laura A. Nodolf, Republican, 52,936. Midland College Trustee District, Midland College Trustee, Place 7. Adrian Carrasco, 21,863. Will R. Green, 11,431. R. Sean Rainey, 10,113. Midland College Trustee, Place 8. Scott Lynch, 32,116. Ralph Way, 10,104. Midland College Trustee, Place 9, Scott Kidwell, 43,265. Midland Independent School District Trustee, 1247. Trustee, District 1, Precincts 201, 2013, 305, 308, 310. James E. Fuller, 1693, Michael Booker, 1497, Matt Reyes Galindo, 1489, Trustee, District 2, Precincts 302, 304, 306, 307A, 309, 309A, Robert Marquez, 1968, Rachel Davis, 1328. Trustee District 4, Precincts 101, 104, 105, 109, 109A, 208, 212, 303, 307. Steve Vargas, 2082. Joel Deal, 444. Katie Wallace Joyner, 1860. Trustee District 7, Precincts 401, 404, 407, 409, 411. Joseph Gallegos, 2886, Brian Murray, 4407. City of Odessa, Precinct 406 only, Mayor. Dewey Bryant, 868. Javier Hoven, 303. Gloria G. Apollinario, 135. City of Odessa, City Council Member at Large. David R. Turner, 656. Latasha Gentry, 90. Joanne Davenport Littleton, 85. Denise Swanner, 445. City Council Member District 2, Stephen M. Thompson, 800. Rachel D. Miner, 435.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 5th. Clara Thompson, age 85, of Midland, passed away on Monday, November 2nd. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, November 7th, at Goldbusk Cemetery in Cullman, Texas. Clara was born on August 10, 1935, in Stephenville, Texas, to Letha Mahala Martin and Thomas Bernard Stafford. Clara grew up in Stephenville and attended Tarleton State University, where she met her husband Joe Thompson. They married in August of 1955. Clara is survived by two children, Robert Thompson and his wife Star of Frisco, Texas, and Sue Ellen Stalter and her husband Dean of Midland. She's also survived by six grandsons and one granddaughter. Clara is preceded in death by her parents, husband Joe Thompson and her daughter Janet Thompson, and son-in-law Robert McCommon Jr. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Midland Humane Coalition, 4206 West Loop 250 North in Midland, 79707. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Juan Ramirez, age 30, of Odessa, passed away on Sunday, November 1st. A viewing will be held from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, November 5th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, November 6th, at Mid-Cities Community Church, 191 Campus. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Juan was born on May 1st, 1990, in La Mesa, Texas, to Maricela Ramirez. Juan is survived by his mother, Maricela Ramirez of Odessa, two sons, Juan Xavier Ramirez and Juan Tez Ramirez, both of Odessa, mother of his children, Marina Martinez of Odessa, brother Jesse Ramirez and Ryan Ramirez of Odessa, brother Joel Ramirez of Odessa, sister Vanessa Rendon and Jason Marmalejo of Odessa, brother Nino Rendon and April Castillo of Odessa, brother Emily Rendon and Keisha Ontiveros, as well as 11 nieces and nephews and other family and friends. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Kristen Lee Hendricks Hayes, age 47, went to be with our Lord and Savior on Friday, October 30th, in Dallas. Kristen was born to Carolyn and John Hendricks on Tuesday, November 28th, 1972, in Midland. She attended the Hillander School, San Jacinto Junior High, the Hockaday School, and graduated from Midland High School in 1991. Hayes also attended Southwestern University and graduated magna cum laude with an English and philosophy degree from St. Edward's University in 1997. Kristen met and married Raymond Lee Hayes in 2000. Together, they had one son, John Rhett, born in 2002. The family later moved to and maintained homes in both Dallas, Texas, and Boulder, Colorado. Kevin is survived by her beloved son, John Rhett, mother Carolyn Wilmoth Rogers, and stepfather Jerry Lynn Rogers, sister Leslie Hendricks Wood, and brother-in-law Lee Files Wood, niece Amy, nephew Grant, and sister Carmen Hendricks Bryant, and brother-in-law Billy J. Bryant. Kristen is preceded in death by her father, John Henry Hendricks, her paternal grandparents, Ellen Wiley and Smith Henry Hendricks, and maternal grandparents, Martha Wood Lyle and Tom T. Wilmoth and Clifford Lyle. The family will be having a private service officiated by Pastor Steve Shore, but a live stream will be available at 2 p.m. on Saturday, November 7th at www.npwelch.com. All are welcome to join the family in a celebration of life at the home of Carolyn and Jerry Rogers at 6 p.m. that evening. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Nina Willis, Grammy Nina of Midland, Texas, died unexpectedly on October 24th, peacefully in her sleep. A visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 5th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Services will be 2 p.m. Friday, November 6th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Nina is survived by her sisters, Imogene Carwile and Joyce Rinker, and brother Jim Willis. Children Pam and husband Barry Kirby, Paula and husband Howard Morrison, Robbie and wife Lindsay McBride, as well as grandchildren and great-grandchildren, a sister-in-law, Alice Jeno, and many nieces and nephews. Nina is preceded in death by her parents, Elmo Willis and Lena Mae Daniel Willis, brothers Elmer Lee Willis, Elmo Winford Willis Jr., Jack Willis, Leroy Willis, sisters Lewis Leffler and Bobby Joe Husband, and grandson Tyler James Kirby. Nina was born in El Paso on September 20, 1941, to Elmo Willis and Lena Mae Daniel Willis. Nina married Bob McBride on September 3, 1960, and then welcomed two daughters and one son. In lieu of flowers, please make donations in Nina's name to Casa de Amigos, 1101 Garden Lane, Midland, 79701, Midland Senior Citizen Center, 3303 West Illinois in Midland, 79701, or to any charity of choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. Front page. Three city races head to runoffs. Thompson wins District 2 over Minor. OA News at OAOA.com. For those weary of election season, it isn't quite over yet. Three city races will head to runoffs, as no candidate managed to reach 50% of Tuesday's vote plus one. The races for Odessa's mayoral seat, District 1 and the at-large positions head to runoffs at a to-be-determined date. The date will be set by Odessa's City Council. The highly contested races drew social media rants, full war chests, and a bit of a local dust-up amongst Republicans over local endorsements by the members of the Ector County Republican Party's executive board in what have always been nonpartisan races. Only one candidate walked away with his seat on the council outright. Steve Thompson in District 2 defeated Rachel Miner 4,456 to 3,657, or 54.92% of the vote, to Miner's 45.08%. Miner was one of four candidates endorsed by the executive board. Thompson blasted those endorsements Tuesday night and voiced his support for other non-endorsed candidates who are heading to runoffs. I'd just like the people of Odessa to know that the local Ector County Republican Party office endorsed a squad of candidates that did not reflect the feelings of the people of the city of Odessa, he said, adding he is supporting mayoral candidate Dewey Bryant and at-large candidate David Turner. Bryant is currently the District 2 member, and Turner is Odessa's current mayor. Both men termed out of their current seats and sought the new elected positions. Bryant was in a three-person race with Gloria Apolinario and Javier Hovind, who also was endorsed by the GOP executive board. Bryant got 42.51% of the vote, or 12,198 votes, and Hovind got 39.91%, or 11,454. Apolinario got 17.58%, or 5,044 votes. On Tuesday night, Apolinario voiced her support for Bryant in the runoff. Bryant is the CEO of Southwest Bank. Bryant said his strategy for a runoff is to reiterate the things that are, quote, so important to our city right now. I think that's the fact that we are a community. We are a community of Odessa with citizens that make up this wonderful community. We're representing the community. We're not representing any particular person. We're representing the community, and I think that's the most important thing that we need to all know. And particularly what I want to portray is that we move forward, Bryant said. Hovind has had experience with the city council, having served in the District 5 seat from 1996 to 1999 before resigning. He later ran again in 2010 for the District 4 seat, but lost to Dean Combs. Hovind is currently the precinct chair for 204 of the Ector County Republican Party. Hovind, interviewed outside Republican Party headquarters, said he just wanted to get through the night and find out what the numbers were. Basically, what you'll be seeing is making a play for those that were in the race that split the vote, and we'll see which way they're going to want to go and what platform they want to support, Hovind said. Current Mayor Turner will face Denise Swanner in a runoff. Turner got 12,355 votes, or 44.98% of the at-large vote, while Swanner got 28.86%, or 8,185 votes. Out of contention are Joanne Davenport Littleton, who got 13.77% of the vote, or 3,906 votes, and Latasha Gentry, who got 3,511 votes, or 12.28%. Swanner, another of the candidates endorsed locally, said she will continue to campaign hard to win the runoff. We're going to campaign hard. We're going to raise more money, Swanner said Tuesday night. I'm in this to win. I want to work for the citizens. I can help make the right decisions for the community. Turner did not return repeated phone calls, email, or text messages on Tuesday night. Odessan Mark Mata was also an endorsee and he survived a four-person bid for District 1's seat and will meet incumbent Michael K. Shelton in a runoff. Shelton was appointed to the seat in 2020 after Malcolm Hamilton's abrupt resignation. Mata took 44.26% of the vote, or 1,721, to Shelton's 19.11% of the vote, or 743 votes. Newcomers Tiki Davis and Eddie Mitchell were out of contention, with Davis at 18.21%, or 708 votes, and Mitchell at 18.42%, or 716 votes. Davis will throw his support to Mata, while Mitchell said he doesn't support either runoff candidate. Mata said he will continue his grassroots campaign before the runoff. "I feel confident going into this runoff that I'm going to take the lead that I have right now and build on that," Mata said. "We are going to be doing a lot of block walking. We are going to a bunch of houses and putting my name out there." Shelton told the Odessa American on Wednesday morning that he will continuously speak with the voters of District 1 until the runoff. "I'm going to go door to door and sit down and talk with the people about the issues," Shelton said. "I want to go see what they have to say, not to sit back and let them come to me. I want to go to them. We have to sit down and come up with the idea on how we can fix with what's going on in District 1. Ruth Campbell, Royal McGregor, Federico Martinez, and Michael Merlo contributed to this report. Visit oaoa.com for the latest on the presidential race. Todd Falcon, director, wants world-class program by Federico Martinez. FMARTINEZ at oaoa.com. Todd Dooley, the new athletic director for the University of Texas Permian Basin, made it crystal clear what his priorities will be: creating a world-class athletic program and providing student-athletes with a top-notch education. Dooley, who becomes the university's third director of athletics, made his comments during a press conference held at the university's D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Center on Wednesday. "Providing services to our student-athletes is paramount," Dooley said. "We want them to be competitive and successful in sports, but we also want to prepare them for when athletics no longer play a major role in their lives. That's the truest metric of our students' success. It's about getting an education, not just a degree." Dooley succeeds the popular Scott Farmer, who is retiring after more than 30 years in intercollegiate athletics. Dooley officially took over the reins on November 2nd. Farmer developed the university's athletics program, which includes leading the effort for the construction of the Performance Center. Under Farmer's leadership, Falcon athletes have excelled in the classroom as well, University President Sandra Woodley said. "This past spring, student athletes averaged a 3.17 GPA, she added. While Dooley inherits a strong program, he acknowledged there are some challenges ahead. "The biggest challenge is navigating an athletic program during COVID-19. Collegiate athletics is already complicated," Dooley said, "but when you add a pandemic, it becomes even more so. We're going to do everything we have to do to protect our athletes, but also everyone on our campus." Dooley previously served as the Executive Associate Director of Athletics at the University of Louisiana Monroe since 2016. While at ULM, Dooley ran the day-to-day operations of the department while directly overseeing various administrative units within the department, such as facilities, game operations, ticket office, equipment room, compliance, academics, and student services. During his tenure at ULM, Dooley oversaw major improvements to the university's athletic program, including more than $10 million in capital projects and facility upgrades. "I'm truly honored and humbled to have the opportunity to be the director of athletics at UTPB," Dooley said. This institution is perched for great things. Our best days are still ahead. Pfluger wins big in District 11 by Laura Dennis, LDENNIS at OAOA.com. San Angelo's August Pfluger ran away with the District 11 congressional seat, nabbing almost 80% of the vote in the sprawling district. In Ector County, unofficial results show Pfluger with 25,396 to John Mark Hogue's 8,428 votes. He soundly defeated Democrat Hogue, who had 42,422 votes and 18.8% of the vote. Wesley Alpha Cody, a Libertarian from San Angelo, got 4,160 votes, or 1.8% of the vote. Pfluger got 178,837 of the unofficial District 11 vote. Reached by phone on Tuesday night, Pfluger said the election results represent the way the district thinks and the conservative values, quote, we hold dear. He said citizens of District 11 want someone who will protect the 2017 tax cuts and someone who will stand up for oil and gas in agriculture. People want our Second Amendment values and sanctity of life issues upheld. People want our Second Amendment values and sanctity of life issues upheld, Pfluger said. A political newcomer, Pfluger said he has been amazed and humbled by the people of District 11. My family and I have been amazed at every single place and event that it never fails, and it is not one, two, or three people who do this, but multiple people who come up and say they are praying for me or my family, Pfluger said. That is the most incredible feeling, and there are people who don't know us well or at all, but are praying, and it speaks volumes to how special this district is. Pfluger defeated a field of 10 in the GOP primary in March to succeed Midland's Mike Conaway, who announced his plans to retire after 8 terms as the District 11 congressman. The sprawling District 11 includes 29 counties, including Odessa, Midland, and San Angelo. Pfluger campaigned on his record as an F-22 Air Force pilot for almost 20 years and said it would help him unite District 11. Early in the campaign, he said West Texans are ready to rally behind the idea of servant leadership. I rally behind the idea of servant leadership. I am from District 11. I will fight for District 11 and work hard for the people of this area, he said. He said competition is good, and he learned that by competing to become an F-22 pilot. They don't just hand that to anyone, and being in combat is also competition. Pfluger, who graduated from the Air Force Academy with honors, holds advanced degrees in aeronautical sciences and military strategy, and is currently completing another master's degree in international business and policy from Georgetown University. He said the journey has been incredible. I would say it was a fun experience, but the real work starts now, he said. I will represent the needs of District 11 and of oil and gas, and we need a voice. That is a priority. District 11 congressional candidate August Pfluger waves at traffic as they drive by the Ace Hardware polling station on Tuesday morning. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 7,074. Ector County negative, 27,130 out of 34,584 tested, with 380 pending, 121 deaths. Recovered, 5,650. Active, 1,303. ECISD daily cases, 14 students, 8 staff. Midland County, 5,843 confirmed, 98 deaths. Texas, 926,400 confirmed, with 8,404,187 tested. Total Texas deaths, 18,320. U.S. cases, 9,357,245 total confirmed, and 231,988 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. 279 days. For 279 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through August 30th, the city has spent $60,283.18 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. Page 2, read. College instructor uses experience to teach others, by Travis Woodward, MC Director, Marketing and Communications. Midland. When I was young, I thought about going into the oil field, Ray Salgado said. I was going to drop out of school. However, thankfully, I was counseled not to do that. The oil field business goes up and down, but as long as people are behind the wheel, auto collision repair and refinishing will never go out of style. So, for 20 years, Salgado worked in the auto paint and body field. He also enjoyed training and mentoring new employees. I love teaching, Salgado explained. It comes naturally to me. Even at church, I am always teaching people. In 2014, Salgado was in the process of changing jobs when he read in the newspaper that Midland College needed a part-time instructor for its paint and body instructional program. So he applied for the position and was hired. There is a big demand in the auto collision industry for technicians, Salgado explained. In the last few years, I started noticing that fewer technicians were available because they were retiring and there wasn't new talent to replace them. It made me realize that I could help fill that gap by teaching a new generation of technicians. Once hired at Midland College, Salgado immediately began working on an Associate of Applied Science, AAS, degree in automotive technology. He credits his wife with pushing him to pursue a degree. My wife was my mentor, Salgado said. She encouraged me to go to the next class and helped me study. She helped me learn and never left my side. Born and raised in Monahans, Salgado has lived in Midland for 15 years and now considers himself a native Midlander. Salgado and his wife have 4 children and 2 grandchildren, and faith and family are important to him. For the past 2.5 years, Salgado has driven to McCamey every Sunday to preach at Iglesia Bautista El Buen Pastor. He said he will continue to do so until the church finds a full-time pastor. He has also been a deacon in his local church, Centro Familiar Cristiano, for 14 years. According to Salgado, auto collision repair and refinishing is a promising career. He feels very fortunate to be able to combine teaching with his original profession. Highly qualified to teach in this field with his degree and over 90 hours of certifications, Salgado feels continuing education is key to providing his students with the best learning experience. In the collision industry, there are opportunities to make excellent money, Salgado said. I have friends that are making upwards of $150,000 to $400,000 a year. They can work 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. with weekends off. That's a priority for me. I am big on family. The auto body technician must know automotive, auto body, and auto structure because in an accident, mechanical parts need to be fixed if they are damaged. I tell my students that the more they can do, the more money they will make, the more successful they will be, Salgado added. Pete Avalos, program chair of Energy, Auto, and Diesel Technologies at Midland College, said that Ray Salgado has been a great addition to Midland College in the automotive program. Ray's many years of industry experience, along with the fact that he is an MC alum, has a positive impact on the students when he tells his story, Avalos explains. Explained. He brings a great attitude that's contagious with students, and Ray goes above and beyond to make sure that students get as much individual training as possible. Ray's passion for teaching reflects how he makes every student his priority every semester. It is truly a pleasure to work with him. Ray believes that students get as much out of the learning experience as they put in. I tell my students to have faith that they can learn something new, apply it in their lives, and then be successful, Salgado said. For Ray Salgado, answering the Midland College ad for a part-time faculty position has been a life-changing experience. I appreciate the opportunity to work for Midland College, Salgado said. It has been an honor and an opportunity. I have met and worked with a lot of good people. It's a family. Wedding photos wanted. OA News at OAOA.com. Be a part of the Ellen Noel Art Museum's exhibition, Betrothed, 250 Years of Wedding Fashion, from the Stephen Porterfield Collection. The Ellen Noel Art Museum is looking for people to lend theirs or their family's wedding portraits to get the chance to be featured in the exhibition. Any time period is welcome. The deadline has been extended until November 15th. Photos must be framed and ready to hang. To digitally submit your photo for consideration, please contact Daniel at curator@noelartmuseum.org, along with a short history, dimensions of the frame, and a copy of the photo before November 15th. There are only 40 spots available. The final photos will be chosen by Porterfield. Please do not drop off your photos at the museum until you are contacted. Be sure to mark your calendars for the opening of Betrothed, 250 Years of Wedding Fashion, from the Stephen Porterfield Collection, will be open on December 3rd. On the net, noelartmuseum.org.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.